Good afternoon. We are on the record in House Labor and Commerce, Friday, the 31st of March, 2017, and it is 3:22 p.m. So remember to turn off or turn down your cell phones. And members present, we have Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Knopp, Representative Birch, Representative Josephson, Vice Chair Wool, and myself, Chair Quito. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our support staff today are recording secretary, as usual, Caitlin Ellis. Thank you for being here, Caitlin. And our LIO moderator, Kyle Schramm. So thank you for being here, Kyle. We have two items on the agenda, and it looks like we do have a board of professional counselors up. So we've got governor's appointments, and we intend to hear from two appointees. We'll forward three names, one from our previous meeting, and then we plan on going to Senate Bill 14, Transportation Network Companies. And with that, we will go to Board of Professional Counselors, Harold Henderson. Mr. Henderson?
Yes, how are you?
Good. Can you place your name on the record?
And yeah, my name is Harold J. Henderson.
Okay. Welcome to the House Labor and Commerce Committee, and we do have a question for you, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Henderson, Andy Josephson here in Juneau. I have just a sort of a lightning-fast question, I think. In your application to the governor's office, you said that there could be a potential financial conflict or some benefit in a certain set of circumstances that might create a conflict. And when asked to explain that, you didn't offer an explanation. Can you clarify that one point?
Well, what I was referring to was that if someone were to view my membership on the board as a way to recruit people for my practice, or just to use that position as a way to recruit people. That was what I was referring to. I didn't want anybody to misconstrue any reason why I was there. That was why I said that.
Okay. I have nothing more for Mr. Henderson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from other committee members? Seeing none, thank you for putting your name forward, Mr. Henderson.
Yes. Thank you, and I appreciate all you guys do. I really do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for calling in today.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, and we do have one other person that we will maybe get in this meeting, but we'll hold the motion till later until we actually have an opportunity to talk to her. That's Catherine Ostrom. So with that, we will move on to, we'll put aside governor's appointments to state boards and commissions and move on to Senate Bill 14, Transportation Network Companies. And if we can have Mr. Eiler come forward. Thank you for coming to the House side, Weston, and place your name and affiliation on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Weston Eiler, staff to Senator Mia Costello. Senator Costello gives her apologies for not being able to be here in person this afternoon, but is very appreciative of the committee's time and the scheduling of the bill this afternoon. She's also very cognizant and appreciative of the work that the committee has done on a companion legislation. You know, I won't mention it out of protocol, but that's been before the committee previously. This bill is materially similar, relating to transportation network companies, and our office has enjoyed working with the vice chair of this committee in putting the bill together and moving it through the process. With your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to present the bill and go through kind of the virtues and benefits that we see of it. I know the committee has heard this issue quite thoroughly, and so I'm at your discretion as to how you'd like to proceed, but I'm happy to go through it.
So I think just as a reintroduction, just briefly provide some information for the basis of the bill, and we'll move forward.
Certainly. And thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 14 is the Let's Ride Alaska Act, and it is enabling legislation to authorize transportation network companies, more commonly known as ride shares, to operate in the state of Alaska. This is, during the past decade, Mr. Chairman, these technology companies have revolutionized community transportation. The Senate and Senator Costello brings this bill forward in a time when Alaska is facing our first recession since the 1980s. What this bill does is allow and sets the statutory framework and safeguards to allow these companies, popularly known as Uber, Lyft, smartphone technology companies, to operate in Alaska and provide these services that connect Alaskans to help them to get from here or there. What we're doing here, Mr. Chairman, is authorizing technology companies to operate. These are technology, not transportation companies. They don't own cars. They simply create and provide a platform by which Alaskans can self-select each other to get from here to there. There are amazing community and economic benefits that go along with such a service. The committee has already heard, you know, quite regularly how this works through smartphone technology, as simple as a push of a button. But I'll just reiterate, Mr. Chairman, the what's tackled in the bill and kind of the need for this legislation. In addition to the remarkable economic benefits, which really changed the entire paradigm of community transportation. It provides open and flexible employment for Alaskans, for single parents, for members of the military, for students. It also serves a wide variety of demographics in underserved areas. It provides connections to areas that it's hard to get a cab, for instance, if you're going from Anchorage to the area of Eagle River. These services have been shown to improve access to transportation for members of the disabled community or the elderly, and also lower the number of DUIs. We've heard, and I know you've heard expert testimony talking about these, and I'm happy to answer any questions about it. It also creates a way by which we can connect different municipalities of the state, Mr. Chairman, and that's one of the reasons for the structure of this bill as it is. Companies such as Uber and Lyft provide a way where you can commute and carpool on demand, crossing municipal boundaries from the Matsu into Anchorage, Girdwood down to the Kenai, going back and forth perhaps from the state fair. And so what's enacted here is a statewide solution that allows for the opportunity, this choice and competition to come to every area of the state. And it provides that clarity that allows both individual Alaskans to be TNC drivers and also clearly operate between these municipal boundaries. It complements a lot of the reforms that communities are currently looking at with their own taxi regulations and local transportation solutions. Mr. Chairman, there's also quite a bit of a demand that I know that this committee has heard about. When Uber operated here in 2014, they had over 100 drivers. 2,000 Alaskans have the Uber app on their phone. And during this past year, 60,000 people in our state opened the app just to see if the service was yet available. So really, this is something that Alaskans are really asking for. 49 other states, Mr. Chairman, have rideshare options in their state. Alaska is the last one without it. Mr. Chairman, I'll also just talk briefly about why this bill is necessary. The nuts and bolts of this bill is that it clarifies Alaska's workers' compensation and insurance statutes to allow these companies to operate here in Alaska. Previously, when the company Uber operated in Alaska, they ended up in discussions with both the municipality of Anchorage and the state of Alaska and opted to pause their operations, signing a settlement, which I know members have seen, and I've brought copies if anyone would like additional ones. Part of that settlement, Mr. Chairman, was that before resuming operations, they would seek legislation such as we've brought forward today. What it does is it adds TNC drivers to the list of job classes, occupations in state statute that are exempt from workers' comp. They join a variety of other job types, including taxi drivers. That was part of the clarity and the resolution that the company Uber reached with the Department of Labor in 2014, and is one of the essential reasons why there's a need for state legislation to help deal with this. In the same vein, Mr. Chairman, the state of Alaska is also the one that sets the parameters with Alaska's insurance laws. I know there have been a great deal of discussions in committee about the different phases and coverages and diagrams, and I won't reiterate those. But that's the other reason why you need state legislation to allow for this technology, allow for this opportunity to come into the state. It's not just crossing the municipal boundaries. It's that this deals with workers' comp, insurance, and a variety of other things that are the purview of state government. Mr. Chairman, a majority of U.S. states regulate and have a framework for transportation network companies on a state level. This is an option that we've seen, especially in western and rural states. Additionally, there are several other states, such as our neighbor Washington, that exempt TNC drivers from workers' compensation, similar as proposed in this bill. No jurisdiction also considers these TNC drivers as employees. These fit squarely under what would be an independent contractor concept. You're using your own car, using your own phone, using your own time, and your own skills to work when you would like. Simply at the turning on and off of an app, you're able to work. You just meet the qualified standards for your automobile and your personal record of safety standards and accountability. You can work for one TNC. You can work for two TNCs. Many of them have the same app open at the same time. You could even be an off-duty taxi driver. It's that nimble form of part-time employment, Mr. Chairman, that really fits and draws these sorts of jobs under the concept of an independent contractor, and that's how it is enshrined in the legislation that we're proposing today. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions and could talk a great deal more about what this does to communities, what it provides for various demographics of Alaskans, or the sizable economic benefits, but I'll just conclude in saying that there's a variety of model language that's in this bill that preserves a lot of the safety standards that I think we would expect from any form of transportation in the state. Rideshare companies put their drivers through significant background checks at the state and local level. The bill requires cross-referencing the National Sex Offender Registry and also lays out a variety of parameters by which Alaskans cannot be TNC drivers if they've committed certain offenses within a certain time. As being the last state without rideshares, Mr. Chairman, we also have the benefit of having looked at other options, looked at other states. And I'm happy to talk a little bit about comparison, but I know we have members of the industry online that can provide a little bit of comparison in terms of what they see in comparative jurisdictions. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I'll just wrap up by saying this is a subtle but really potent way to enhance Alaska's economy and improve transportation through innovation. That's the motivation that Senator Costello brought in introducing this bill. She thinks it'll have just remarkable benefits for Alaska, and we're very glad that you're willing to hear it today.
Thank you, Mr. Ryder. We do have questions, but actually what I'd like to do is take a little detour and go back to our boards and commissions and try and get that out of the way. We do have the other individual online, so if we can hold questions, do that. Come right back to Mr. Eiler. So if you can remain at the table. That would be great. If you're, so we do have Catherine Ostrom online. Ms. Ostrom, can you place
your name
on the record?
Sure. Catherine Ostrom.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ostrom. And we do have a question for you, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Ostrom, it's Andy Josephson on the Labor and Commerce Committee. And in your conflict of interest statement, you indicated, and you may have done this by inadvertence or not, but you indicated that you would not disclose your personal financial data to the state. And you also indicated that while there could be a financial conflict, you wouldn't explain what that was.
And I do apologize. I found at the Senate hearing that was in error, and the day I had gotten on the website I had called, I was having trouble with my application. So there was no conflict. Both answers should be no. And now that they caught that, I'm able to go and rework that, redo the application. So I apologize for that error.
Okay.
It was inadvertent.
All right. I think what you meant, Ms. Ostrom, if I could follow up, is that answers should be, well, at least one should be, I think, yes, shouldn't it, that you would disclose your personal financial data?
Oh, correct. Yes, I would disclose.
All right. I have no other questions.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Ostrom, for taking the time to call in this afternoon, and thank you for putting your name forward for the Board of Direct Entry Midwives, and appreciate you taking your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. and we will go ahead and finish up with our boards and commissions. So first thing I want to do is remind everyone that forwarding these names from the committee does not reflect an intention of any member to vote in favor of confirmation during the joint session. Mr. Vice Chair, can I entertain a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the list of appointees reviewed by this committee be forwarded to a joint session of the legislature for confirmation.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. We have three additional names that we're adding to the total of 61, Catherine Ostrom, Board of Certified Direct Dentistry Midwives, James Henderson, Board of Pharmacy, Harold Henderson, Board of Professional Counselors. Do you maintain your objection? No, it's my objection. I'll remove my objection. So no further objections. We will forward this list, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Thank you. We're back on the record, House Labor and Commerce, March 31st. It is now 3:40 p.m., and we will return to our discussion on SB 14. There were questions. I believe Representative Birch had a question for Mr. Eiler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your analysis. Very good. I'm a fan. One question. You know, we've had some discussion about kind of a limited pie, if you will, passenger base, a limited client base. Do you have any sort of any sense or from other jurisdictions or other communities as to if in fact you end up with more customers because of the ease of use and so forth, that maybe instead of trying to divide up an existing number of passengers, that in fact the TNCs, because of their ease of use and so forth, might in fact grow that customer base, if you will. And I was just curious if there is some other jurisdictions where that might be documented or have been documented through the chair.
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Birch, thank you for that question. And in my opening remarks, I should have clarified, when we're talking about transforming community transportation, it very much is in the vein of what you're saying, growing the pie. What this does is create just a completely different avenue that makes it easier to get from here to there. What happens when you do that, and we've seen this in a variety of demonstrations, and I'll cite a specific study in just a moment, is that when you make it easier to get a ride, that's not only quick, easy, but often cheaper than kind of the regulated fares that you see with public transportation for-hire transportation, car services, or taxis, is that you enable folks to more often than not to leave the car at home. So you actually tend to grow the pie and see more folks that will take a Lyft or an Uber into town. And after they're done with an evening out, if they'll get in, if a taxi's right there when they get out, they'll hop in a cab. If not, they'll get a Lyft or an Uber back. That's the sort of thing that we see in terms of the trends, is that when you grow the supply there, you're not taking necessarily from one to another. You're providing more options. Admittedly, too, it's a very different form of accessing that transportation. You can only do it through a smartphone. You have to have the app. You have to have your credit card in the app. There's generational differences of folks that use that or won't. But what it also does is you can't hail a Lyft or an Uber. You can't flag one down if you see a little Uber U on the car. It's all self-selecting because what you're doing is you're picking a driver with a car that the specs that you want and the safety rating, both the driver and the rider rate each other afterwards, you're self-selecting that's a person to take you from point A to point B. Beyond the anecdotal, Mr. Chairman, there have been studies that have looked at this. These rideshare companies have been in operation for close to a decade. And, besides kind of anecdotal, we haven't seen a great demise or decline in the taxi industry. But we've actually seen studies that have shown that it does tend to grow the pie. I believe this might be in members' packets, and I'm happy to provide it if it's not. But a study done by the Portland Bureau of Transportation looked at what the impact was of when you had rideshare companies go live in a city such as Portland. And while there was an initial short-term dip in terms of the number of cabs hailed, what they saw is that over the six-month period of that pilot study, for-hire transportation actually grew by upwards of 40%. So what you're seeing, Mr. Chair and Representative Birch, is not only is it growing the pie, but it's expanding and giving more access to transportation for folks that might not go out because either it's hard to get a ride, they're elderly or have other concerns, but it also isn't supplanting the existing transportation models that we see in our communities today.
Great, great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Justin.
Thank you, through the chair. Just a couple questions. You said that this system, you talked about how this system complements what cities are doing. And I wanted you to describe how that's so. I think you said something about complementing what cities are doing.
Oh, certainly. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, and again, this is completely anecdotal, but as you'll see in the news or recent ballot initiative in Anchorage, is communities are looking at, you know, how they regulate, how they number, how they limit for hire transportation, whether it be taxis, car services, et cetera. So that comment was meant, and you know, the intention of the sponsor is that this is intended to kind of improve community transportation. The Anchorage Municipal Assembly, as you're aware, has looked at these sorts of reforms and phasing in more of their medallion permits. Other communities I know have CPV or commercial passenger ordinances that deal around the coast. So the intent and the hope here is to, you know, fit in with what is happening in terms of those reforms to make it easier to get a ride and increase that supply of transportation in our communities where there's clearly demand.
Thank you.
Bob? Yes. You also talked about how states are regulating TNCs, and I guess my concern is that this bill is, there are exceptions, but there's not much regulation at all of the industry. Do you see this bill as sufficiently regulatory of TNC?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, 44 states regulate ride shares on a statewide level. The approach that the sponsor took in dealing with this, and I think you'll see, you know, a good deal of any of the concerns mentioned in terms of regulation, public safety, insurance, or recourse are handled in the bill. Ride shares are required to follow all traffic laws. You know, public safety, local authorities, and state are able to monitor that. Both the DMV and the business license that these individual drivers have to hold all provide a number of manners of recourse if there are problems. In addition to that, there's a remarkable amount of feedback and self-correcting that happens within these transportation network companies themselves. These aren't companies that actually wait for problems to arise. These are ones that actually are continually evaluating and reviewing the ranks that both drivers and riders receive. So, for instance, if you have a bad driver, if you have someone that is not, you know, meeting the standard, that is not friendly, that is not prompt, that is, you know, aggressive anyways, you know, you have instantaneous feedback by which those are often self-corrected within the companies themselves. So the sponsor is quite comfortable with the structure and the setup that's provided for in the bill and believes that it provides for the safeguards necessary to have these ride shares come to Alaska.
One more question.
Thank you. Follow-up.
I mean, just as an aside, I don't. If the Department of Commerce is to regulate this, I wouldn't know how they would know what to do. But my question is about the independent contractor status. You said that that's always secured in every jurisdiction. But Seattle, even though there's this pending Washington law, Seattle has treated these folks as employees, and California is still debating this. Is it not?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'd be happy to get back and confirm with you on that. But to our knowledge, no statewide jurisdiction considers rideshare drivers to be employees. Recently, for instance, on the regulatory level, the state of Oregon determined that that rideshare drivers were not employees and were thus exempt from workers' comp. The state of Washington, to your example, specifically carves out rideshare drivers from the state's workers' compensation program. There are a little bit of nuances across comparative jurisdictions, but by and large, Mr. Chairman, Representative Josephson, they fit under, again, an independent contractor model, and that's why there's such put into statute in this bill as exempt from workers' comp, along with taxi drivers and other comparable professions.
Thank you. Just one follow-up within the scope of the
follow-up.
The previous. So, through the chair, I mean, it's my understanding that in a number of the states, they don't describe these drivers as independent contractors. They leave that question open for a court of law to determine. Am I right about that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, we'd be happy to provide a little bit of comparative information that we have from the rideshare companies. And, Mr. Chair, I know that they're available online. Several states are silent in terms of how they define or frame the concept of independent contractor in their statutes. Many other states, Mr. Chairman, I might point to, such as Arkansas and others, they basically they have a five-prong or a variety of tests that they put in statute. So while it varies widely, the ultimate effect by having no state considers these drivers to be employees, the effect is largely the same. Your question is kind of how is it spelled out in their statutes? We can look comparatively, but the end result is ultimately the same.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for presenting today. I appreciate that. I guess my take on the bill, since I certainly do support it, is more of an economical overview, and with the thought that we do want to encourage new development in the state and new businesses to come here to invest. Can you tell me how many jobs we may calculate that may actually be developed with the Lyft and TNC company coming to the state of Alaska, maybe starting with Anchorage, for example?
Certainly, Representative Sylvan Leonard, through the chair, and we'd be happy to provide. We have a myriad of data on just the immense benefits that these companies and this sort of technology has provided across the country. Diving in and doing forecasting it into a state and local level is a little bit beyond my depth here today. But what we've seen is that just one of the companies that's not even the largest, the company Lyft estimates that they basically add $750 million to economies around the country. They've seen and cited an increase in spending in local businesses in new markets that they've set up of 49%. In surveys, they found that 60% of respondents agree or strongly agree that Lyft provides access to more areas. Beyond that, for the local level, Representative Sylvan Leonard, through the chair, we've been talking with a variety of stakeholders that would likely use or take access or take advantage of having these sorts of nimble jobs available, and they fit very well to the types of citizens we have here in Alaska. The military is a great example of it. Being a rideshare driver is one of the few positions or few side jobs that an active duty military personnel can take. This could have huge benefits as, again, a very flexible, nimble form of employment that they can turn it on, work when they can, and help provide for their families on their own time. It's also a great boon for students. We've heard I've listened to testimony in this committee from some of my friends and colleagues that work in the visitor industry, that this is something to where after the cruise ships leave for the end of the season, having something like this is a good way that might allow them to stay in Alaska after seasonal employment might have ended as they transition to try to find another job. It's also something that's been shown to be remarkably beneficial for folks that can't have a 9-to-5 job. Either they're retirees that need supplemental income, perhaps they're single parents that have other constraints throughout their day. So while I don't have specific figures, when Lyft was here briefly for just a few months, when Uber was in Alaska for just a few months in 2014, they had over 100 drivers. And you can see just kind of extrapolating from there, if this is allowed to, if this new technology, these new opportunities and the choice and competition is allowed to come into Alaska, I think we're, the sponsor, thinks that this could really transform and catapult our economy in subtle but potent ways that we can't even fully enumerate in this afternoon.
Follow up.
Thank you. Just for a quick comment. Thank you. And that's what I was looking for, too. I would love to see the numbers. But, for example, in my area of the Mat-Su Valley, there are a lot of families that work part-time jobs because that's what's available. So something like this would certainly highly be desirable in Mat-Su Valley. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pinnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know that I have a question. I'm going to make some comments, and I'm sure there'll be a question somewhere at the end of that. It's interesting. We can spew out a lot of language when we're trying to justify something we want really, really bad, And that's what I think that we're doing here. I don't mind the TNC companies. I think it's upcoming technology. They're going to come, probably needed, as you mentioned. What I don't like is the particular bill and the components of it where we talk about not regulating anything. You know, and you spoke of you can't be a criminal and you got to carry insurance, you got to stop at stop signs, just the basic stuff that we do every day in life. So as I read through the bill, it doesn't, you know, it defines a few things, who's covered, who is not in that. But we talk, we define the drivers, you know, as far as commercial, not having to register them as commercial operation. But here's the problem. I think we want it so bad, and when I look at what other states and municipalities have done, Portland, Houston, Washington State, their bills are about yay thick. We got 9-10 pages here, you know, of legislation that does not regulate but exempts pretty much the whole industry. But here's the real problem, and so I'm just an advocate for the local control issue, and I think where we're falling down on this is that we talk about TNC companies, which are really basically in a nutshell selling an application. Other than that, they're providing no insurance, no drivers, no nothing, technology, a payment service, so to speak. And then you got the TNC drivers who, as you mentioned, will have to obtain a business license, carry their insurance, which anybody driving a car would. But the business license component, and so though we're not regulating TNC companies, when you become an independent contractor and you're carrying a business license. So in the Kenai Peninsula Borough, for example, you have to register to collect a sales tax. You have to have a business license to do so. They are an independent contractor status. I'm not quite sure that this bill regulates them as independent contractors. You're you are regulating the TNC companies that provide in the application. So I think we're so eager to get this coming that we're not really thinking this thing through. And it bothers me that since we are probably the last state in the union trying to adopt it, everybody else has had issues, and they change the regulations, they adopt more regulations, that we hurry into this. And so I think for me the questions are still out there. You know, what is really going to happen at the end of the day here? We attach zero fiscal note to it, but you know that the Division of Licensing is going to get bombarded with applications for business licenses. And then they'll have to register with local municipalities to collect the sales tax. I have concerns about it. And I think for me, if we would have just let the local option have the fix on it, we just put in the bill the basics of what will be required for insurance and inspections for both drivers, medicals, vehicle inspections, and then let local probably take care of the issues that will eventually arise, I'd be more comfortable with it. So my question here, I knew there was going to be one here at the end of the day. My question is, so what about my comment on the independent contractor status? They'll all have to be licensed as independent contractors, and they will have to comply with the tax regulations, but the company itself doesn't. So I think it's almost two different issues as far as this bill, and it's probably going to be argued somewhere down the road from a local municipality. As you all know, we have received lots of letters of objections from local governing bodies to not having that option. So tell me what you think about that particular issue in regards to the independent contractor business licensing registration. Will this bill really extend to those drivers?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I think there's a variety of things in there, and I probably ought to follow up and, you know, clarify kind of the question and cut to the heart of what you're talking about there. I think there's, you know, certainly the sentiment and the intent of the bill coming from the sponsor is not to, you know, increase burdens or be, you know, troublesome or highlight some of the I guess problems or anticipated worries that you mentioned. I think the Senator Costello sees this as a great positive. If that's something that will grow the number of people, you know, registering for business licenses in the state, that's a great thing. We're in the process, or we're in the midst of our first recession since the 1980s. And there's a variety of other things that I might follow up, and we're happy to talk with you and your staff about, specifically with regarding insurance coverage and things like that that I believe are covered in the bill that we'd be happy to clarify with you on. Questions regarding the independent contractor, I guess I'm still uncertain exactly on what you're driving at there. What this bill does, and again, there's a variety of ways in which, as Representative Josephson's questions highlight, there are a variety of ways in which American states define and outline, you know, the concept of working as an independent contractor. In approaching this bill, we took that road for two reasons. The first is that when the company Uber operated in Alaska in 2014, the first page of the settlement that they signed with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development said that they would not, you know, resume operations or seek to resume operations unless state law was passed that specifically exempted these TNC drivers from workers' compensation. Many of the other issues that you talked about, Representative Knopp, with regards to insurance, likewise are largely the purview of the state of Alaska. That's, I think, fairly settled in terms of the regulations that can be required aren't allowed to vary on municipal areas. I mean, we set the statutes on that. There can be additional requirements for taxi drivers or others. But the legislation that's before you actually puts the transportation network companies on the hook for insurance that exceeds pretty much any local jurisdiction in the state of Alaska in terms of insurance coverage. We also, again, approach this as an independent contractor model. The only way that we really currently have in statute, which is adding TNC drivers to the list of those job types exempt from workers' compensation. The administration, I know, is looking at other legislation that would kind of define or enshrine definitions or create, you know, another apparatus to judge these. But we approach this because of the simple fact that these are mostly part-time jobs. The vast majority of Lyft and Uber drivers drive for less than 20 hours a week. They are not beholden to any shift supervisor or any sort of or constraints on their time. It's completely at their own discretion when they work. It's completely at their own discretion what car they drive, as long as it meets the standards. They use their own phone, their own talents, and it fits, you know, more along the lines of what we see with independent contractors as opposed to employees. And there aren't any other jurisdictions statewide that we know of that have that. So the sponsor is very eager to talk with you if you'd like and go through those questions in detail, because there's a lot there. But I mean, we view this as a great positive in addition for the state of Alaska, and it's not done out of any angst or hurry up to catch up to the other 49 states. It's done because we have an opportunity in front of us, and we've had the opportunity to use model language that brings together a lot of the concerns you've mentioned on public safety, worker classification, and others, which is why our bill and the framework it's set up might be a little more lean and might be a little more simple, but that's something that will allow, you know, average Alaskans to take advantage of it and allow a statewide solution that, you know, connects different municipalities and allows this technology to come to the state.
I'm not going to dispute that it's bad. I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing where we're falling down is by taking out the local option, because we're leaving too many questions. I don't want to talk about the benefits, but I think we all will acknowledge that. I'm not saying it's bad to have them here. I'd like to see them here as well. But you know, even in the current statute today, if you're an independent contractor, you are exempt from workman's comp insurance. If you're just insuring, you know, you don't. I mean, I don't carry workman's comp on myself. I have a contractor's license. You know, if I have employees, they're all covered. Mm-hmm. So that statute exists. So where, as you just mentioned, all these drivers will have to register as independent contractors, which means you have to have a business license. And then you have to register.
Representative Knopp, do you have a question, please?
Yep. So that's the point I'm getting is we're talking apples and oranges. He keeps explaining to me the benefits of the bill and the service. I'm talking the merits of the bill, and what we're writing is what I'm arguing right now. It's not substance enough, and it could be if we would It could be if we would take out that local control language, the exemption, where in the back, let me just look at this real quick. This is my problem. This is my problem.
So, Representative Knopp, what I'd like to do is you are referring to a committee substitute that has not yet been adopted. So what I'd like to do is go ahead and adopt the committee substitute. So just for everybody's information, Senate Bill 14 is substantially similar to House Bill 132. We've already heard that bill extensively. We had five meetings in the last 3 weeks, including several hours of public testimony. So we do have a committee substitute that was prepared by bill sponsor in conjunction with the sponsor of House Bill 132. And I'd like to have Mr. Vice Chairman, if he could move the committee substitute, please.
I sure will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the committee adopt the blank CS for SB 14 version 30-LS0250/L as the working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. And we have Representative Wool's staff, Laura Steidolf, if you can come forward, place your name on the record and affiliation, and provide a discussion of the changes that we will see in the committee substitute.
Good afternoon, Chairman Keto and members of the committee. Thanks for having me. My name is Laura Steidolf, and I'm staff to Representative Wool. The CS before you basically incorporates the changes that the companion bill in the House had already made up until this point, one of which was the work draft that this committee had seen at its last hearing on this bill. And we also cleaned up and clarified some of the amendments that were passed in the other body. The first change, and this is a cleanup, it's a more prescriptive 7-year look back at the crimes that would disqualify a person for being a driver for a TNC, and also cleaned up the 3-year look back at their moving violations, which would also disqualify them. And actually, the first change was page 8, line 24, adding AS2823050 and AS2330395, which were clarifying a more independent contractor language that's in statute, just adding two statutes to that. And then, as I mentioned before, page 9 through 10, we removed lines 27 through 31 and added and lines 1 through 21, and added B, a transportation network company driver. Company may not allow a driver to accept trips through its digital network if the driver has, in the past 3 years, been convicted of or forfeited bail for a third or subsequent moving traffic violation, been convicted of driving while license was canceled, suspended, revoked, or in violation of a limitation under AS2815-291, which is failure to stop at the direction of a peace officer, reckless or negligent driving, a law or ordinance of another jurisdiction having similar elements to this offense. So if this happened in another state, they not only in Alaska, but it would disqualify them. And then in the past 7 years, been convicted of any unclassified Class A or Class B felony in this or another jurisdiction, as well as misdemeanor offenses, which were AS2333, AS2835-30, and AS2835-030, which were operating a motor vehicle while under the influence of drugs or alcohol, operating a vehicle, aircraft, or watercraft while under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and also the refusal to submit to a chemical test. And also a crime under AS2835-050, which is not reporting an accident immediately, 2835-060, giving information or rendering assistance during an accident. And we also included crimes against a person under AS1141, which is an extensive list of violent crimes against an individual which may not be captured in unclassified Class A or Class B felony. And there was, we added, if they're listed in the United States Department of Justice National Sex Offender public website, they will be disqualified from being a driver for a TNC. A new part of this bill that wasn't addressed in the House version is that we've added an age limit. They must be 21 years of age or older to drive for a TNC. And then another new piece of this legislation that was added in the CS is a transportation network company driver may not provide a prearranged ride unless the transportation network company rider has been matched to the driver through the digital network, solicit a rider or accept a street hail, or solicit or accept cash payments for a fare. So this was added to make clear that TNC drivers may only accept rides from the TNC platform, that they do not operate like other for-hire vehicles by soliciting riders or accepting a street hail, and that the payment is through a cashless system. And the payment in this section does not apply to tips, which can be cash. And then page 10, lines 29 through 31, add, and this was section 28.23.105. This is new, a new piece that was added and that this committee has not heard before, which is a motor vehicle that is used by a transportation network company driver for transportation network company purposes may not be 12 years of age or older. So some companies actually are more restrictive than that. The car has to be 7 years old or newer, whereas we're giving them a little bit more leeway if other companies were to come in. And page 10, lines 29 through 31, adding section 28.23.105, transportation network company vehicles. Oh, we just went through, sorry. Page 11 and page, line 12 and line 15 was an amendment that was offered by someone in this committee, which was for record keeping, changing it from 1 to 2 years. And we accepted that change in this committee substitute as well. Page 11, line 17 through 21 was the international airport language that we heard in this committee that was brought to us by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to regulate TNC drivers at international airports which are owned or leased by the state. And section 8, lines 6 through 10, this is a provision that was heard in this committee before, but it is allowing for municipalities to impose a local sales tax for similar services that are offered in the area at a similar rate, as well as spelling out that TNCs must follow municipal traffic ordinances. So those are the changes. You've heard most of them in committee, and there's a couple more that we just clarified further. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Seidolf. And Representative Justison?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Seidolf, just if you could, what are the changes between E and L?
E and L were the two more statutes that listed the first change that was the two statutes that clarified independent contractor language in Alaska statute.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Birch?
Just to confirm, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To confirm, has this been reviewed with the folks that the TNC folks and the representatives that we have been dealing with, at least at the House level, for some time now?
Representative Birch, to the chair, yes, it has been.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Knapp.
So I guess that's really what goes through my mind when I read this thing. And I'm sure the intent is to apply to TNC drive to companies and drivers. But when I read it and we talk about, so on page 8, line 23, section 28.23, it says, line 23, a transportation network company is not an employer of transportation network drivers. And then 24 goes on to, a transportation network company driver is an independent contractor for all purposes. So I think maybe that's some of my problems other than local control, but I'm not so sure that the bill really applies to transportation network drivers as independent contractors. It applies to the company. And so I think that's kind of, I'm not the attorney here, but I would argue
If I was, I would probably argue that we're talking about the company in itself that's selling the software component. And when you get down to a local level, I can see at some point somebody's going to argue that case, you know, because you are a licensed, you're a completely independent contractor. And so if this bill said independent, this bill applies to TNC's end drivers, but it really doesn't. It puts a few rules on drivers, but it doesn't. Mr. Josephson, if I may dialogue just a little bit through the chair, completely off track here?
Do we want to take a brief at ease?
Yeah, take a brief at ease. Let me get this clear in my mind.
All right. Thanks. Okay, we are back on the record, House Labor and Commerce. And we are working through Senate Bill 14. We do have the committee substitute in front of us. We've had discussion and questions on the committee substitute. And I would like to remove my objection to adopting the committee substitute. Are there any other objections to adopting version backslash L as our working document? Not seeing any objections, we've adopted the committee substitute. It is before us, and we do have a proposed amendment by Representative Josephson.
I move amendment, it'd be amendment number one for our committee.
Okay.
I'll object.
We have an objection, so Representative Josephson.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair, what this amendment does is first of all, lines 6 to 10 are designed to give the driver a chance to know how a rate was derived, and it relates, frankly, to the bottom of the amendment, lines 21 to 23, in that we're told that the TNCs will rather routinely change rates, which in my mind means that they're not independent contractors, that is, the drivers aren't, because I generally wouldn't impose such a thing on an independent contractor and get away with it. And in the middle, in the event that a court of law were to find that TNC drivers could organize, nothing that a TNC company did could prohibit that effort, or punish a driver for trying to make that effort. So that's what the amendment does.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, some of this is just the terms of service between a business and independent contractor. So I don't feel the need to legislate it. And sorry, I was rushing. I was trying to find the amendment when you made your first
salvo.
can you repeat the first part? I was trying to find the amendment, and I
sure.
Honestly,
Representative Josephson.
Yes. You. So essentially, parts B, lines 6 to 10, and also subsection 2 at the bottom, are designed to give the driver.
I gotcha.
The right to know what's going on. Why do they receive X fare instead of X minus something else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. So as far as the rate, the rate, I guess, similar to what a taxi charges, their fee, from my understanding, and maybe someone from one of the TNCs can join in here, I did actually talk to them about one of the complaints that
point of order. We're trying to find the right page here.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Let's take a brief at ease. So we are back on the record, and there was some confusion. So what I will do is clarify that the amendment one, as written, was written to a prior version of the committee substitute. So it might not match up exactly with what's in the version L that we have before us. If the amendment passes, we will make sure that legal does conform it. So I think it's really the statements of Representative Josephson on what the bill, what the changes do, would still be applicable. Is that correct, Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Okay, and so Representative Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe for those reading along, if you go to page 11, line 8 is the records section, so maybe that's where it goes. As far as the fare, that's what I meant to say, not the rate, the fare.
from what I was told, because there was a previous testifier that said, you know, the fare, they were changing what they charge and hence changing what the driver was earning on some sort of regular basis or frequently. And I talked to someone, I believe from Uber, that said there has been rate decreases, but very seldom. Not like every day or month, but like maybe every year or two. So, and again, they can back this up. There is surge pricing. So during rush hour or times when there's a high demand and low supply, they introduce surge pricing, which I guess incentivizes drivers who are not currently on the network or who are not maybe picking rides up. It incentivizes them to go and pick up rides. So if there's a lot of riders and not a lot of cars out there, they do surge pricing. It's a sort of function of supply and demand. It's a temporary thing, and I think it's a raise in price. So the drivers actually get more money during this sort of rush hour peak time. But as far as the overall fare increase, from my understanding, that is not a fluctuating thing. It's pretty regular, and you know, just
Representative Wohl, is that a question you would have for
sure.
Either Mitchell Matthews or Rena Davis?
Sure, either one. Maybe okay, start
Mr.
with Mitchell Matthews.
Matthews, did you kind of understand what Representative Wohl was talking about, and can you answer the question?
Yes.
I guess I should ask Mr. Matthews, have you had a chance to actually see the proposed amendment?
I have seen the proposed amendment. I'm referencing it as we go.
Okay.
If Representative Josephson, I believe, would be able to reference a specific section, I would be happy to speak to.
Okay.
To the question.
Mr. Matthews, Representative Wohl did have a question for you.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Matthews, so there was a question about fares, and I think it's the section starting line 6 or line 10 that Representative Josephson was talking about fare change, and the driver should have knowledge of how the fares are structured and how, you know, sort of rate systems and referring to the rapid change of the fare, and I was telling him, other than surge pricing, I didn't think that was a commonly changed thing.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Wohl. So we do have dynamic pricing at times where there's high demand and limited supply. As for more general changes to a fare structure, we would potentially change a fare in a market. And we would issue an agreement to the driver, which they would have to agree to that change in the fare or fare structure. And so it could be a fee addendum or a posted rate addendum that would be submitted, and the driver would need to accept before they'd be able to go online if they agreed with it or not. We haven't cut rates in Seattle since I joined the organization, and we've also gone and raised rates in other markets as well. So it's a two-way system where sometimes rates are decreased, other times rates are increased over a period of time. For the whole amendment itself, there is information within this with respect to global positioning data and information on that which we would try to keep anonymized for privacy purposes. And so I think there's some ambiguity in here which I think may infringe on some of the privacy components that we have of the amendment itself, just to speak generally to it as well.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. And I do want to let members know that we have people from Uber, Lyft, Department of Transportation, from Southeast Sales, and Lasky Municipal League to answer questions.
Can I ask him one question?
Representative Josephson has a question for you, Mr. Matthews.
Mr. Matthews, you said that the company will tell the driver, we're changing your fare, and the driver must agree. And I'm just wondering how that driver is possibly an independent contractor. I mean, I thought independent contractors...
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, so in Seattle, Washington, for example, it's not just TNCs which are able to set the fare, the minute, the mile, the base fare attached to that. The for-hire or companies within this city are also able to set their own fares. And that would be the minute, mile, and time value associated with that. So that information is what would be adjusted. We wouldn't change the fare that a driver would be given. The fare is based off that base calculation of time, space, and distance. And so that would be a change to a market based off of pricing. Nope. And so the driver doesn't have to necessarily agree with that, but that's the pricing in the market, and we would issue a service fee then on there, and they would be able to drive on another TNC that may have different pricing within the market. So if Lyft or another TNC came to Alaska, there's other apps out there that they would be able to use if they didn't agree with the fares that were set that make up that minute, mile, and base fare on the Uber platform specifically.
So any other comments or questions on Amendment Number 1? Representative Birch.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't know. I don't see where this is helpful. Enumerating prohibitions against or discussing the issue of driver organization and driver association or labor organization or the activities of the drivers. I don't see where this is constructive or helpful, and I don't support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Still maintain your objection?
I do.
Madam Secretary, can you call the roll, please?
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Wolf.
No.
Representative Birch.
No.
Representative Knopf.
No.
Chair Keto.
No. So with one yay, five nays, Amendment 1 fails to pass. That brings the bill back before us. Do we have any questions for anybody online, comments or thoughts about Senate Bill 12 or Senate Bill 14 as amended?
Under discussion broadly?
Broadly, yes, Representative Josephson.
Well, I guess my disappointment is that the minds of man and woman could craft a TNC bill that everyone sort of wins at. I don't mean to end my sentence with a preposition, but where everyone wins, that could be done. And I'm frustrated because I think that the local governments deserve to regulate this. They're each unique. And I confess I'm not always consistent with that philosophy. It would be wrong for me to say I always say the local governments should be able to intervene in what might be a statewide model. I think that we're sort of waving a magic wand and saying, notwithstanding a lot of law, these folks are independent contractors. I've looked at the IRS test, and it's true that they pass, or they jump over a number of key hurdles. But I think that, for example, the IRS asks, who's doing the hiring, supervising, and paying? And I think that in that test that Uber or TNCs don't necessarily pass. And a key one is there a continuing relationship between workers and employers indicating that employer-employee relationships exist? I think the answer is absolutely. It is a continuing relationship. And also, the number 12 test of the IRS, payment by hour, week, or month. This points to an employer-employee relationship, provided that this method of payment is not just a convenient way of paying a lump sum agreed on as the cost of a job. Independent contractors usually paid by the job or on straight commission. Now, granted, they're paid by the job, but what makes this sort of a quasi-independent contractor is, number one, you have a situation where the TNC is buying insurance for an independent contractor. That's just odd. It's very nice. I mean, in a way, it's a weird thing to complain about, but as a factual matter, it suggests they're not independent contractors. You also have a situation where there's fluctuating pay. I'm an attorney. If someone needed my services and I said, yeah, I'll do your trial at $50 an hour, and on day three of the trial, they said, yeah, we're just paying you $35 an hour, I could take them to court and sue them and win. And I don't get that. I mean, that suggests they're employees. They also don't get the money in the first instance. They get it in the second instance. That doesn't suggest that they're independent contractors. So I guess my concern is, you know, my concern is really not with the passengers. I think passengers are going to make out well. I think that I share some of Representative Klayman's concerns from a previous committee about when the app isn't on, but yet they're still sort of in an employment stage because they're about to shift it on and they're driving across town to get to where the action is for future future rides. I'm not sure there's great coverage there. And I also don't like the idea that, I mean, everything in the law tells me these are common carriers or at least contract carriers. They're not just individuals driving around. They're taking people's lives in their hands. And I think most of the time it'll work out, but sometimes it won't. And relating to the win-win part, I'm looking, for example, at a Washington Post article from June 27th, 2016. And these are replete. They're all over the Internet, BuzzFeed, et cetera. It said that when you pay your gas and you pay to fix the vehicle and you pay the tolls, a Detroit driver makes $8.10 an hour. Houston driver makes $9.93. Denver makes $12.17. The Detroit driver is actually making less than minimum wage. And so I'm worried, my concern is with the drivers. And, you know, I suppose we could say, well, geez, they can quit. But a lot of them will make an investment, and it will become a lifestyle, and they'll give up, they'll forego other work potentially. They'll use this as a means of sort of making a living. So I have a number of concerns, and I just sort of feel like this could be a great system. And by the way, I want to be clear, somewhere in my house in Anchorage, there's a Blockbuster video card. I need to shred that. Sorry, Blockbuster, but, you know, people aren't going to Blockbuster, and there's a reason. I understand that people, you know, the economy's changed. I get that. I'm all for that. You know, another example for me is travel agents. I'm sure they're great travel agents. I don't seem to need them anymore. But at the same time, I just sort of feel like this could have been done in a way where drivers come out a little bit better. And I also, you know, one of the things that's been a problem for me is the companies. Their approach has been just horrible from my standpoint. I mean, for example, being told, oh, we can't wait to come back. You weren't supposed to be here. You were violating the law. And I just read that in Paris there were riots about Uber. And they've asked the passengers in the cars, not the drivers, not that you should ask them either, but they've asked the passengers to help contribute to the cost of damage caused by rioters. Why would you ask passengers for that? It's just odd. And then when I looked at the municipal ordinance, which I won't go over again, but the Anchorage municipal ordinance, as Representative Knopf said, there are all these things in where the local community, by the way, it supported Uber Lyft 8-3. So it's ultimately coming down on the side of the TNCs, but not without real regulation. And we're saying all of that work goes away. We don't need to know about that work. So I guess I'm saddened that, and I don't know in the final analysis how I'll vote. It sounds like I do, but I don't. But I'm saddened that something that wasn't better for drivers couldn't be crafted, and wasn't that didn't allow local governments to say, hey, you know, Ms. Wasserman said, at the Ketchikan port, you've got buses and cars and cruise ships, and there's chaos, and we need some control. We need some say. They're not going to get that. So I'm concerned with those things. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just speak broadly in support of this substitute and the TNC initiative in general. I commend the sponsors and the folks that have put so much effort into this. I think I think we've seen the problems with overregulation. It stifles economic development and opportunity. Certainly the action in Anchorage and communities across the country to open up their communities to ride sharing is a good indication of the success this has had.
And I'm very excited to have this opportunity to move this forward and to consider this for our my constituents and our neighbors in Alaska. So I it's a good effort, you know, and I look forward to moving ahead. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Representative Sullivan Leonard?
No comments.
Thank you. And I will make a brief comment. I do think a lot of work has gone into this bill, and while we may not achieve perfection the first time around, I think the thing that we have to think about is how do we start helping a new industry come into Alaska, and then how do we make sure we manage it appropriately. We are making an effort to try and do that with this bill, but we also need to think about how things end up operating once they start. So I don't think any one of us can anticipate what the result of this legislation is going to be in all respects. We just have to get the process started and start working with this new paradigm here in our state. So I do think it's a good idea, and its time has come. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate all the work that's been done in this committee and by the other sponsor and the other body and the other committees that have heard this bill. And we've certainly heard it a lot and had a lot of testifying. I thank all the people that called in and wrote in and came in, especially a lot of the local people, too. I do understand the concerns of people on this committee and people that I've heard from. You know, there's concerns with certain labor issues, independent contractor and work comp and those kind of things, and there's concerns with the local municipalities. So, and I, it doesn't go unnoticed to me, that's for sure, and I'm trying to work, and we added a lot of stuff to this this latest draft to, you know, add more restrictive language and put in statute, you know, how old the driver has to be. That wasn't in there before. So in theory, there could have been a 17-year-old driver, which I just don't think is the right thing to do, especially when you're picking up people that may be under the influence of alcohol or something like that. And that's what this will help. You know, this is a public safety thing, too, and I understand about the safety of the drivers. I really do. I also understand about the safety of the drivers on the road, of people that want to be safe on the road and not be having, you know, drunk drivers around. And I know people that will say, you know, this is so much easier to use, and they may go out more, so they may spend money more. They're going to be safer, and I'm not taking a slam at cabs by any stretch. And I don't think the local governments have been all that great to cabs either. And the case in Anchorage is perfect because, again, I don't live there, but I read the paper, and there's all this commotion about medallions, and should we add more, should we take them back, there's elections, there's repeals. And I would bet that the municipality down there would rather not have to be dealing with this. And there's a lot of municipalities, and Alaska's not a densely populated state, and I know that, but there are communities on the Kenai Peninsula that border each other, and, you know, in the Matsu Valley that border each other, and even to a smaller extent in Fairbanks. Fairbanks has three municipalities, the city of Fairbanks, the borough, and the city of North Pole. So I don't think that these TNCs are going to come to each of these municipalities and negotiate a separate deal about insurance or about different coverages. I just don't think that's going to happen. In fact, they say they won't do it, and they've done statewide in 40 states or something like that. So this isn't a new concept. There's what, between 500,000 and 1 million drivers nationwide, I believe. I don't think the sky is falling. You go to Vegas now, they have a taxi line in front of the casino, and now they have an Uber Lyft line. So I think it's being accepted and embraced, and I think if there's bugs, they'll be worked out. I think Alaska needs it. And as far as like protections such as minimum wage or how much a driver makes, as was stated in earlier committee meetings, a cab driver leases a cab for, let's say, $100, $110, buys his gas, drives around. If it's a slow night, he could lose money. Not only get paid minimum wage, he could get paid negative wage. And no one's jumping up and down about that. I mean, it's unfortunate, and we don't want that to happen. If they do that enough, they're going to stop driving. But that's a reality of certain kinds of businesses. You don't always make money. And certainly if you own your own business, you don't always make money. So, you know, I think people evaluate that. And as far as Representative Joseph talking about how he's in the middle of a case, isn't going to, you know, be told his rate's going to go down. Well, in the middle of a ride, I don't think your rate's going to go down either.
I mean, and Mr. Mitchell said he hadn't, the rates hadn't changed in Seattle since he's been there, and I don't know how many years that was, but I don't think it's something that happens willy-nilly. And, you know, and Representative Josephson mentioned his blockbuster card, which is appropriate. But let's not forget that Netflix used to actually mail out DVDs to your house, hard copy DVDs. And I don't know people that do that anymore. Now they stream. So, and I think you still can get a DVD from Netflix mailed to your house. So businesses adapt. You know, cabs have apps. It's the future. And we can sit around and watch it go by, or we can get on board and, you know, we can make changes and adaptations as needed.
Thank you. And before we continue, I'd want to acknowledge the presence of former Labor and Commerce Committee Chairman Kurt Olson in the audience here, I'm sure wanting to be back up here. No. Thank you for being here, and thank you for watching our exciting discussion. Do we have any further discussion on Senate Bill 14? Seeing no discussion, Representative Wohl.
Next page. I move SB 14 version 30-LS0250/L be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
And do we have objections from the members of the committee? No objection. Senate Bill 14 passes, and we will take a brief, let's go ahead and wrap up our work, and then if everybody can stick around, we will just after adjournment sign the paperwork. So we do have a meeting tomorrow, Saturday, April 1st. Our agenda is House Bill 103, Optometry and Optometrists, House Bill 124, Benefit Corporations, House Bill 36, Tax Income from Non-C Corporation Entities. So that meeting will begin at 3 p.m. We have the room until 5 p.m. We will get everyone out the door before Skits. So with that, thank you everyone for being here, and we are adjourned at 4:46 p.m.